Hey guys, it's Jory here.
What up, Coach Fam? It's Abby.
AAA. Good job, Abs. I'm like a little mellow this morning. We've had a little bit of a rough time editing, organizing this podcast. For some reason, the links aren't working. We might need to get a new software. But what's up, girl? How are you?
Now that we're finally recording, I'm in a good mood. It's taken us a half hour, but we're finally here. But we do have big news, or at least I have big news. This week, Jory and I got an email from a TV producer based in Los Angeles who is casting Jewish singles for a matchmaking series on a major premium streaming platform. It doesn't have a name yet, but you already know that I signed up as the
Of
single
course.
representative of the podcast. So if you guys love hearing my voice on this podcast, hopefully I'll get casted on this show so you can, see my beautiful face too on a weekly basis.
Oh my God, I love it. Like, literally, so jealous. It's my dream. First of all, I love Bachelor more than anything in the world. And, like, this is perfect. Like, hot Jewish guys, hot Jewish girls, like, all in one place. Oh, Abby, you're gonna do such a good job.
We'll
I
see
mean, I
if
hope
I
you get
get
casted
it.
and picked.
I
Of
think
course
my
you will.
application was pretty good. And then also, like, you and Saul could apply and pretend not to know each other. That could be
Oh, that'd be
entertaining.
so funny.
And like the
I would love
drama.
to apply.
What?
We'll see if I can, like, I would love to apply. I'll see if I can do a little, if he'll let me, like my little one way out. Oh, so wait, so it's a, you don't really know too much, but do you know if it's like in the US or Israel or it's like.
So they're looking for American and Israeli based singles. So I think like probably the filming would be in the US because, it's a company based in LA. But she didn't really give us a lot of information. It's untitled, it's still in the works. But if our listeners want to apply and maybe meet their nice Jewish boy, just
I love
look
it.
up untitled matchmaking project. castingcrane.com, and maybe when we both get casted, we can all be best friends in real life. But
100%. Like, if anyone's interested, just message us and we'll 100%.
we'll send you the
Let
link,
you know
we'll
the
hook it up.
details.
And like this show is my dream. Like Jory said, like we've been watching The Bachelor,
Total.
Too Hot to Handle, Love is Blind, and we're like, oh my God, they need a Jewish version of the show. And
Finally.
looks like our prayers were answered.
They were. They definitely were. Okay, so what else is going on? So let's see. We both had really outdoorsy weekends. I went hiking. I don't know, upstate. Upstate's super cool in New York. Like, there's tons of places to hike. So I did like intense hike, like off path and got hot and sweaty and all that good stuff. And then on the way back, I went to Angry Orchard, like the cider place. They have like apple picking and like all different types of cider they don't have in like the stores. And like we watched how the cider was made. So that was like really, really fun.
That
What
sounds
else is
like my
going
ideal
on?
weekend.
Literally ideal. It was so fun.
Like getting in hiking and then going for like apple cider. It's so American fall aesthetic.
So American. I know. There's pumpkins everywhere. I was trying to think. Something else really funny happened to me. Maybe not. Okay. What happened with you? Definitely had like the craziest. You had like a, oh my gosh, Coachella type weekend.
Okay, it's the Israeli version of Coachella. Actually, we're talking about it this weekend, and Coachella is like $1,000, right? Like it's crazy expensive.
Much is this? How many, like how many shekel or how many American dollar?
So I don't know. My friend that I went with convinced me. We went 3 years ago, and it was epic. And then she was like, "Everyone's gonna want to go because of Corona, so you have to buy early." And I stupidly bought it early. And it was like 500 checkout. And I remember 3 years ago, I got it for 150. But next time, I'm just going to wait and buy it off someone else. Like, that was so dumb. So you can get it for super cheap.
Wait, really?
But still, it doesn't, like, even the most expensive price doesn't compare it to Coachella. But obviously, like, Coachella's huge. But yeah, I didn't even say the name of the festival. It's called Indie Negev. And it's 3 days.
The Negev.
Like, you get it to play on words because it's like, indie Israeli artist, but also we're in the Negev, you know? So yeah. It's a little little Israeli play on words over there. And you just camp and get to know like new Israeli artists, some who are like really big names and then some who are just starting out. And when I went 3 years ago and still even now, like I'm not really a part of the Israeli music scene. So it's really just to get to like know new artists and everything, and also to just like get drunk and dance and camp in the desert.
So fun.
Yeah, I know that
you were so.
Yeah, you went on your gap.
I went 1 year too. I'm so sad we didn't go together, but it was 3 days or 2 days or something like that in a hot. Okay, so camping, super fun experience. Loved it. Like the music and everything and drinking all day is my scene. But camping is not my scene. I remember waking up in the tent. Saw a water bottle, thought it was water, end up chugging it, but it's vodka.
Oh my gosh.
Those were the days when you just like had vodka and water bottles. Yeah. So we brought all those vodka and water bottles, and I like woke up so like hungover and thirsty, and I'm drinking vodka like at 8 in the morning. What I thought it was
Yeah,
water.
That sounds like stupid shit that I would have done on my gap year too.
Yeah.
But this time around I was 25, so I actually did have one of those huge water bottles, like that I, you know, and okay. I knew it was water. I also bring it to work and everyone like makes fun of me. Like Israelis have like asked me if I'm a camel on the bus. You know, like the big, they're these huge like gallon water bottles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my sister gave it to me because she's like, this is useless. And I actually do use it because hydration is important in the Middle East. Okay.
Oh my God. Totally. Like super, super important.
I've gotten like really dehydrated. So yeah, I was alternating between shots and drinking water and sunscreen and
so
just like, being safe and discovered a lot of new Israeli artists. I actually, I remember 3 years ago, my friend wasn't available to go. Like she had a work thing. So I went to the first day like entirely by myself. And it was like that just, she showed up the next day, but I made new friends. And also, you know, like, a lot of times guys are like, you know, down to adopt you for the night.
So, oh yeah. God.
And then ever since
yeah, how was the boy scene? How was the boy scene?
It was kind of like alternative Israeli guys. And I'm kind of more of like a mainstream girl, but obviously these type of like alternative is great.
Mainstream American.
Yeah. So, but overall it was a great time. And if you guys need any Israeli music recommendations, my favorites. Lola Marsh is like the Lana Del Rey of Israel. I'm saying it right now. Okay. Go listen to her shit. Like, this is what the funnest thing about the festival is, not knowing anything, just going to listen.
So fun.
Yeah. And who else were my favorites? I don't know. Any, you could look up Indie Negev on Spotify and you can listen along with me. And as you can see, my voice is raspy like Sophia Bush. I don't know why, because I wasn't screaming any of the lyrics, but I guess because of like the dust in the desert. But best time.
Socializing.
Yeah. I'm coming down from like, you know, the high of it. So I'm happy that I'm having a conversation with Jory right now, like, you know, to not be super depresso, that I'm like, you know, just back at home in Herzliya, living my normal life.
I know. Did we talk about this last time that you're living with like one of my really good friends from Israel? I mean, my really good friend from your course that I did, Helena. We'll have to have her on also.
Yes.
She's super cool.
She has a lot to offer. We're actually going to have one of my roommates on the next episode. So like, and the people that me and Jory interact with are obviously awesome. Like we wouldn't chill with boring people. But before we get to the next week's episode, we have a very, very cool guest for this episode. The one and only Dr. Batsheva Marcus. You want to tell us a little bit about her before we?
Yes. So she is a certified sex therapist. She's awesome. She also owns runs a clinic called Maze Women's Health. She's written a few books. She has like so many degrees. She's awesome. So we're going to be talking about sex, orgasms, vibrators, boys, everything in between. Really excited. This is definitely more like out of like what we usually talk about.
We're going to get a little raunchy, but not really.
Yeah.
She's very professional. Not like raunchy. She's very professional. Yeah.
But I'm really excited because this is like will be fun, and we'll put our podcast maybe on more people will listen because we're speaking with someone speaking about sex.
That always gets the people going.
That gets the people going for sure. So stay tuned. Hey guys, and welcome back. Abby and I are here with Dr. Batsheva Marcus, who is a certified sex therapist with a PhD in human sexuality and a clinical director at the Maze Women's Health. She is a Jewish woman who pushes for women to have and be educated on great sex, pure pleasure, and above all, passion. So excited that you're here with us today.
I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yay! Amazing. So tell us, how did you become interested in sex therapy?
Oh my God, that's such a loaded question, right? Okay, so I always was, and I think people can relate to this, people who are kind of in the field or thought about going to the field, I was always the friend that everybody could talk to about sex. Like that was just, I felt comfortable about it, which was incredibly ironic because my family never talked about sex. I had the world's worst sex education. And if you want later, I'll tell you the most embarrassing story about how I first found out about intercourse. Like it was just ridiculous. If some kid told me at school, it was ridiculous. Anyway, so But I was always really comfortable talking about it. I had a lot of thoughts about mikvah, using the ritual bath when I got married. I felt like nobody talked about those things. And then I pursued a different career. I was working in the Jewish community. I was doing Jewish communal work. I loved it. And then by kind of a weird confluence of events, I took over with a friend. A friend of mine was running a laboratory, you know, a medical office, and he wanted to run an infertility laboratory, and he asked if I would come in to do it. And I was kind of between things, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And he was a urologist who specialized in, get this, you didn't know urologists could do this, in male sexual functioning. So he's a specialist. He's one of the country specialists in male sexual functioning. And that was 25 years ago when Viagra came on the market. And when Viagra, which is probably longer than most of you old, it's probably older than most of you, but that was like Viagra on the market 23 years ago. I know because I was pregnant with my youngest daughter. And when Viagra came on the market, all of a sudden it made the field of male sexual dysfunction, it made treating male problems like erection issues so easy. And so then they started saying, oh, women, maybe it's not all in women's heads either. And so he and I, 23 years ago, were like, you know, somebody's got to be addressing this issue, women's sexuality, from a much more sophisticated view than the therapist talking to you about your shame. Like, that's important, but that's like one teeny, teeny part. And so together I went back and got some more training. I already had a master's in social work. I went back and got more training. I went back and got another master's. It was my third, and then ultimately my PhD in human sexuality.
Three masters?
I have three masters. I have a master's in Jewish studies from the Jewish Theological Seminary. I have a master's in social work from Columbia. So I did those at the same time. I have a master's in public health, and now I'm a PhD. I know, my kids make fun of me. Anyway, so I have three masters in PhD. I know, it's ridiculous. Anyway, and I really, really want to get an MBA, but my husband's like, are you serious? Anyway,
go for it.
Don't you think so? That would make a format. Yeah, maybe. I'm going to think about that, Abby.
Like, might as well. You already like gone so far. You have to, might as well just like get the MBA.
I just need time now that the book is done. So yeah. So we created Maze Women's Sexual Health. And what makes it unbelievably special is the fact that it marries the psychological and the medical. So we have medical people on staff who do all of the issues relating to pain and hormones and medications. And we have therapists on staff who deal with all the trauma and shame and just like basic education that none of us get. I mean, I guess the two of you, I don't know, I'd be very curious to hear, but the two of you grew up in either an observant home, Orthodox background, Jewish day schools, not Jewish day schools. The sex education we get sucks. And so, I kind of came in through the back door on this and became educated as I was learned from my patients and just passionate about this idea of understanding sex in the whole person, understanding the whole person. So that was a very long answer to a short question. Sorry.
Now I'm kind of interested in hearing about how you found out about intercourse, because like, how old were you? How did it happen?
No, it's like a crazy story. I was in fifth grade. I remember it so clearly. I was in fifth grade. So what is that? Maybe 12 or 13, which is really too old. I just want to tell you, for all of those of you heading off to be parents, yes, you should start talking to your kids. In the Netherlands, the kids can articulate for you like how a baby is made by age like 9, I think. And in Europe, I think it's 11, and the United States is like 13. Like, we really lag behind. So I came from a pretty, you know, pretty religiously serious home. And when my teacher in my chumash in my Bible class asked, like, how do people have baby? Like, she said, oh, you know, Sarah and Abraham had a baby, whatever it was. And I said, oh yes, you pray to God and that's how you have a baby. Cause that is what I was told. And this woman, well, she wasn't a woman. She was a fifth grader sitting behind me, started laughing at me. Myra Brodsky. I still remember her name to this day. Can you imagine? Like, it's like 50 years later. Anyway, so at recess, Myra Brodsky schooled me on what intercourse was. So now I finally knew what. But I think that was part of the issue. I think part of the issue was I felt so angry at a system that didn't educate me and didn't tell me what was going on that I felt like I wanted to change it. So I think that was part of it.
When did you find out, Abby?
Yeah, Abby, when did you find out?
I don't remember when I found out. I just specifically remember thinking, like, in fourth grade that sex was illegal. I didn't know what it was, but I was like, oh, like, it's illegal because no one talks about it.
Yes. Yes. No, I think that's amazing. It's, people think it's either a really bad thing or a really illegal thing, or they go together. Totally. Yeah. Or kids. Yeah. Yeah. No, no, no. How about you?
I thought it was bad as well. I think I thought it was something bad. I thought it actually had to do, well, at first everyone thinks babies come out of your belly button. So I thought that was. Now,
I don't think I thought that, but maybe, I don't remember. I don't even know if I thought about where the babies come out. But it's very common for kids to think that.
That's what I thought. And then I feel like I was fifth grade too. I don't really remember. It might have even been, yeah, we didn't really talk about that in my household. I grew up like conservative, but I just always got uncomfortable and I didn't know. And I think my parents did too. But yeah, it was like frowned upon.
It's so funny when I'm speaking to parents, because I do a lot of speaking to parents, and I'll say to them, so how many of you are comfortable talking to kids about sex, right? And I have 100 parents in the room, and like 98 will raise their hand. They're like, oh, we're super comfortable. And then I'll say, okay, well, how many of you have talked about sex to your kids in the last 3 months? No hands go up. So like, why exactly is that? And they'll say, well, they didn't ask. You know, it's so fraught for us. Like, we think we're comfortable. The parents think that they're comfortable talking about sex. And probably if you went running up to your mother and said, mommy, how do you have babies? Right. Or mommy, what's oral sex? Or what is he doing in that picture? Your mother or father would be super uncomfortable, but would probably answer your question. And that's their idea of being comfortable talking about sex. But what I'm always saying to parents is that you have to be talking about sex all the time. Like, it has to be a normal part. Can you imagine if when you were 12 years old, your parents sat you down and said, let's talk about nutrition. We never talked about nutrition at all in your life before, but now we're going to tell you what the macros are, what the micros are, what your body needs. Like, yeah, in a 30-minute conversation, we're about to fill you in on everything you need to know about nutrition. No, like, they take you to the grocery store. You help them make dinner. They pick up an apple. They make snide remarks about what they're eating or not eating. It's woven into your whole life. And that's kind of how sex education should be also. You know, it's not just about intercourse, for sure. It's about body parts and respect and pleasure. I mean, there's so many. Anyway, you have me on my soapbox. But seriously, I feel like you and Jory, you're right. Like, it's not just Orthodox families that don't talk about sex.
Yeah.
No, right. Nobody does.
Yeah.
I think it might even be an American thing, because you're saying in the Netherlands, you know, that people are laughing about American culture. I don't know. Maybe it's because we started, you know, very Puritan. I don't know, yes, where it comes from, that we're so prude about it.
Yeah.
I think that's really true. I don't think it's any better in Israel, if that makes you feel better. I don't think it's any better in Israel. No. Sex education in Israel also sucks, if you'll pardon my saying that. But there are some countries where it is definitely better.
More.
So.
Yeah. I have a question about Maze Women's Health. So this is a center where, just I want to reiterate this again. So anyone can go there. Any like female can go if they have any questions, and they're just doctors that can help you out with that. Do they get birth control? What is
it? Yes. Okay. So yeah. So Maze Women's Health is part of Maze Health. We also have a men's center. We have a laboratory. It's a pretty big group. Okay. Maze Women's Sexual Health, we deal with sexual issues. So we'll, if you're seeing us, we're more likely to take you off birth control than put you on birth control, because what one of the things we found is that in many, many cases, birth control can really affect your libido or your desire, or can really affect your vulva and your vagina and make them dry. And it looks like Abby wants to say something, although maybe not.
Well, I just, I didn't know that about birth control.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, there's some things.
Okay. So here's something you need to hear. So let me answer the maze question first, and then I'll answer the birth control question, because I think that's really important. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have the same thoughts. So I'm going to write down birth control so that I remember. Okay. So basically, you wouldn't come to us really for like your standard, you know, like I just need birth control. You can actually go to a standard OBGYN for that, or believe it or not, there are now online places that do that. They give you, mm-hmm. you have a meeting with a nurse practitioner online, and you can, you know, get prescribed birth control. You come to us if you are having trouble getting turned on, if you can't have an orgasm, if you have any kind of vulvar pain when you're trying to have penetration, and we can spend a lot of time talking about that. If you just don't want to have sex, if your desire is low for sex and that's causing problems in your life. So those are usually the four, like what I call the four quadrants. I wrote a book, Sex Points, and I tried to take what I do with my patients and put it in the book. Those are the problems women usually come in with. And we have patients who are 18 years old who are coming in because they can't have penetrative sex. It hurts too badly. Or they got, you know, into a relationship a year ago and now their desire for sex just plummeted. Or we have 50-year-old women who are going through menopause who have the same problems. So so that's why somebody would come to our center. We're specialists. So usually people don't come in just looking for birth control. But if they're coming in for something else, we will deal with people's birth control. So does that answer the question about what Maze does?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And now do you want me to talk about birth control, or do you want to ask a more specific question, or do you want me to go in a completely different direction?
I want to know... women that are struggling with all those things, like how the hell do they get started? You know, like what are your tips with women that are just
can,
like,
yeah. Also, how can we find you? Is it a copay? Like,
okay. It's expensive. Okay. All right. It's out of network. It's not like going to a standard OBGYN, but just so you understand how it works, the first appointment is a 45 minutes with a therapist and 45 minutes with a medical person. And not always because we think that there's a psychological component, but because we feel like sometimes, let's say you have low desire. So it's not because we're going to sit there saying, oh, it's because you had some trauma you don't remember. It's going to be like, well, your low desire may be because of your birth control, let's say, just for argument's sake, but it's having a significant impact on how you feel about yourself and how you feel about your relationship right now. And so we want to make sure that we're dealing with the whole person. So the first appointment is both the therapist and the medical person. And then the follow-up appointment, we run blood levels. We want to get a full picture of you as a person to be able to help you. And then your follow-up appointments are with both or one of the team or whatever it makes sense at that point. Sometimes you'll just be seeing the medical person with check-ins from the therapist. And sometimes you'll be seeing the therapist with check-ins from the medical person. So that's kind of how the process works. Again, you would come to us when you're having an issue, but we're not cheap. I don't know, you know, but if you have out of network benefits, if you even know what that is, but you get 25, sure. You may not. Okay. Then you absolutely can see us because everything gets billed through your medical insurance. So there's sometimes a copay, but here's what I want to say. And I really feel this strongly. I can't tell you the number of women who come in, call us, are afraid we're like too expensive, go see five doctors, spend 8 months in therapy. And now they feel like, oh, they've spent, you know, they saw a therapist for $200 a therapy session. So that's $800 a month. They spent 5 months in therapy. They've now spent $4,000 on therapy and God only knows how much time and haven't gotten anywhere. Whereas if they walked in our door, it would have been so much cheaper. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm always saying to people, like, just be careful how you're valuing your time and long-term effects. Does that make sense to you guys?
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. But I do have to say something about birth control. I just have to say it because I'm assuming you have a bunch of women in their 20s who are listening to this podcast. So if your doctor didn't tell you when they put you on hormonal birth control that it might affect either your vulva and vagina, they get dry. This is not everybody. You can get on birth control pills and do fine and great. So I don't want to scare people. But if you find that your vulva vagina is getting drier or feels like it hurts or irritated, or if you feel like your sex drive is kind of like, where the hell did it go? Mm-hmm. Those are absolutely can be secondary effects of your hormonal birth control. And that should be something you're aware of and deal with before you let it get out of control. Because then it can have all kinds of secondary things going on. Sorry, that was just a little public service announcement.
No, we appreciate public service announcements. Love it. So question, I want to talk about your book a little bit. So it came out this year or last year?
Just this March.
Oh my gosh. Yay, mazel tov.
Thank you. It was really,
it was probably like so exhilarating to finish it.
So I finished it like 6 months, you know, you finish it quite a bit before it comes out. So yes, it felt super exhilarating. And then the push for the publication, around the publication day, it was just overwhelming. There's just like a lot of like NPR covered it and New York Times covered it. And that was amazing. And now I'm just trying so hard to get it into the hands of therapists to use with their clients or MDs, like OBs to use with their clients. Because usually when women are having sexual problems, they don't all live in my area. Like we have two offices. We're in Westchester and New York, but I get calls from like Alaska and Minnesota and Chicago and Israel all the time, constantly. And so I wanted to put together sort of the way that we treat so that women, it's not the same as having a provider, but at least you're armed with the information to get started. So, yeah.
So can you explain a little bit about, you know, what your book is about? I know that it's the idea that pleasure is learned. Is that correct?
So what's really unique about this book is that it takes a biopsychosocial approach. And that sounds really complicated. And I want to tell you that I took really, really complicated scientific information for this book and tried so hard. And I think I succeeded and make it sound like me talking. Like I'm not intimidating. I want to have a cup of coffee with you. And I want to explain to you what bioidentical hormones are. And I want to explain to you where the shame comes from. And I want to explain to you like why fantasizing is a really good thing to do and how you get your brain to function better. So what the book does is it says, sex is not magic. You know, people think of it, oh, there's people who are sexual and there are people who are less sexual, right? And all my friends are having great sex and I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Or I'm having great sex and I don't understand why my best friend is having a problem, right? Like we think of it almost as sex being this magical elixir that some people have and some people don't, right? And I think that nothing could be further from the truth, that you could learn and have and accomplish and have good sex no matter how old you are, whether you have a partner or not, because solo sex is sex too, okay? And you can learn to do that, and all you need is the right information. It doesn't matter if you're 18 or 38 or 58, right? Like that is, so I take the information in this book and I package it in a way that I think makes it very accessible. It starts with a quiz, which my children made terrible fun of. It's like a Cosmo quiz. Have you guys not seen this book? I have to send you copies of this book.
I'd love that.
Okay, so after we're off, just email me your email, and I will mail you. Yay. I will mail you, you know, signed copies of the book, and in exchange, just make sure your friends all buy the book. Okay,
100%.
Change the world. Okay,
so it's actually like a Cosmo quiz, like this.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it starts with 32 questions. They're not trick questions at all. I think they're fun to take, but it starts to let you know, oh, here's where I'm having my issues. My issues are actually arousal and not desire, pain and not orgasm. The orgasm might be a result of the pain. So once you've taken this questionnaire and you kind of have points in each of these sections, then I sort of explain how these sections interplay with each other. And then the second half of the book is how to get more points back in each of those sections, which is why it's called Sex Points. Does that make sense?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I'm getting amazing feedback from women. Amazing feedback. And from like every single age, because I feel like we all have questions. Every single one of us has questions.
How long did it take you to write?
Oh, that is such a tough question. So if I say 8 years, are you going to like fall off your seats? I mean, I've been working with my patients. I was writing up pieces of it. I got started. I said, oh my God, I'm boring myself at this point. I put it away for a year. Then I pulled it out. And then, so I kept going back and forth. And also had to package it in a way that people could read it and understand it. And I'm really, really happy with how it came out. And I can't wait to hear what you guys think about it. Because I think it's fun to read. I really do think it's a fun read. But there's so much information about neuroplasticity and hormones and birth control pills and and shame and fantasizing and vibrators. I have a whole chapter on vibrators, which I did my PhD thesis on. So,
oh, I want to hear about that.
All right. Well, we can talk about that.
That's so funny. Okay. What's that? Abby's also a writer. So
yeah. So I'm writing a thesis. Right. Well, not a seminar paper, not a thesis. And how long is the thesis about vibrators?
The chapter on vibrators? How long is the chapter? Oh, what was my thesis? Oh, my PhD thesis. How long was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember. That was many years ago.
How long can you write about vibrators?
Oh, my God. Here's what I was doing. I wanted to understand, like, there was no research. I'm telling you, this was like 25 years ago. There was no research on how many women use vibrators. And I was less interested in that than what the narrative women tell themselves about not vibrators were, right? We know, just so you have a statistic, I'm hoping everybody who's listening gets the statistic, or you guys guess, what percentage of women can have an orgasm from intercourse, from a penis and a vagina with no other stimulation? What percentage?
Okay, 10%? Is that too low?
I'm going to say.
It's too low.
Okay.
30%.
30, okay.
So 3 out of 10, with the research, just 3 out of 10 women. That's 3 out of 10 women have orgasms from intercourse. Okay, from a hand or a mouth, how many women have orgasms?
Probably, should we say 50?
So 70 to 80%.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's good. That's good, right? Yeah. And then 94% have them with vibrators.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? So, and then we, as a society, we kind of judge like, oh, you should have an orgasm from intercourse. That's absurd. That would be like a guy saying he wants to ejaculate by somebody touching his testicles, like rub my testicles until I ejaculate. That's absurd. That is not how the body works. So yet we somehow have this like, oh, it's a gold standard orgasm if you have it from intercourse. And it's a silver standard one if you have it from hand or mouth. And it's the copper runner-up or whatever. What's the runner-up at the Olympics? Is it copper? Gold, silver, and bronze. It's the bronze runner-up if you have it with a vibrator. I'm like, that's crap. That's ridiculous. Where do we even get that narrative from, right?
That's what I think, too. Like, that's definitely something that's
But it's absurd. Like, an orgasm is an orgasm is an orgasm. So I was interested in what happens when you take women who never used a vibrator, give them a vibrator. So I did these long interviews with them prior to it, and then I did a long interview with them afterwards. And I wanted to pull out what were the things that stop women from using a vibrator, and how, as like medical or mental health professionals, can we bolster women so that they can use a vibrator and feel comfortable and happy about it? So, for example, one of the things is a lot of the women were afraid their partners wouldn't like it if they used a vibrator, because I suggest a vibrator for partner sex all the time. And in my experience, and in the, you know, the partners are fine with it. Honestly, it makes their hand and their mouth job much easier. Like, their hands and mouths get tired sometimes. So, and they like watching their partner get turned on and have an orgasm. So what was it that made the women feel like that? And how do we talk about it in a way? And it was so fascinating to watch women who like felt like, oh my God, my orgasms were stronger and more intense. Am I entitled to that level of pleasure so easily? So that's like a really interesting thing to that's what I was looking at in my PhD thesis. But I can't tell you exactly how long it was, but I could look it up. It was a couple hundred pages.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. Wow.
I could do an entire hour on vibrators. So that's why I'm like laughing that you, and there's all different kinds of vibrators. We think of vibrators that go in. So if anybody's listening and is interested, Maze Women's Health, on our website at Maze Women's Health, I have a free 3-part vibrator series where you could just click on it and like, because people find vibrators intimidating and I'm like, they're so not intimidating. In 3 8-minute sessions, I can get you all the information you need to get started. So it's your starter kit for vibrators, free on Maze's
the website. Oh my gosh, we'll definitely sell that. We'll end up putting on our Instagram for all the girls.
I have to follow you on Instagram. Wait, what are you on Instagram? What's
two
your Instagram?
Girls, two girls.
Sorry, I should look for you. Okay, good.
Follow back. We follow you already.
Okay, good. You know, it's so funny. I call myself Instagramma because it was so complicated for me to learn. Now I love Instagram. I'm having such a good time. But then if you have suggestions of things I should do, just pass them along.
Okay.
We saw you did a popular TikTok.
Oh, I know. And my hand is all bruised up from it. I'm like, this is crazy. TikTok is dangerous. Okay, yeah.
No, but you're getting into it. So what are common misconceptions you get from your patients about sex?
So the one that I feel like is the most harmful is that people think that your sex life kind of is steady and static. So people think that however you kind of learn to have sex with your partner when you're 18 or 20 or whatever, 22, that that's the way your sex life is going to look for the rest of your life. And nothing could be further from the truth. And the problem when you think that is that as soon as you hit a roadblock or something changes, you think, oh my God, my sex life is done, and you don't address it. And then your sex life actually is done. So for example, let's say you start having sex with you're in the new relationship. It's super hot and super romantic and it's new and you're like in love and you're having sex all the time. Right. Exactly. And it's like the Duke from Bridgerton and you're like so excited and all is well with the world. Right. And then a year and a half later, your interest dwindles or you start having pain, right? And now you're kind of a little more avoidant. And rather than dealing with the problem, you start thinking, oh my God, this is terrible. My sex life is over. And you just don't want to think about it. And then you just don't have sex. As opposed to saying, it's a year and a half in. I need to figure out a different strategy for having good sex with my partner. If I'm having pain in my vulva, is it because, you know, of my birth control pills or this other medication I went on, or because I'm not quite as turned on and so I need to use different lubricant, or let me figure that out. Okay. And then, you know, 5 years later, you know, you get married, all is well with the world, you have children, and now the kids are banging at the door. And rather than you haven't had sex in 3 months and you're like, oh my God, we're turning into this old married couple, so we're just going to avoid it, rather than thinking, okay, we need strategies now to figure out how to make time for sex. And like, sex is going to be 20 minutes now, not 2 hours. So let's get those vibrators out, or let's figure out how to fantasize differently, or let's get a freaking lock on our door, right? Or you get a little older and, you know, he's on a new medication or she's on a new medication. There are always going to be changes. They're always, but your sex life should be able to stand you in great stead until you're 80, like, or more. I don't know, 85. My favorite patient was 82. So I introduced her to vibrators. She was awesome. And because it was harder, it got harder to have an orgasm as she got older, and vibrators worked great for her. So I'm telling you that when you hit a sexual problem of any sort, in 99.9% of the cases, they're fixable. I know everybody listening thinks, oh, except mine is not fixable.
Right.
But I'm telling you, but it's not true. They're fixable. What isn't fixable always is all the damage that happens when you ignore the sexual problems. And then the relationship tends to like either get weaker or problematic, or somebody has an affair, or you start feeling really crappy about yourself. Those are much harder things to fix than all the other sexual issues.
The second you see a problem, get on it.
Yes. Help. Yes. And that's also why I think the book could be so helpful, because it's almost like you keep the book there. And when something comes up, you're like, I'm always joking around with people, you should take the quiz every year, but like, or every 6 months, so that you kind of keep a handle on what's going on. But like, you know, I sort of covered lots of things. So you can think to yourself, okay, I'm losing a lot of points from those kids banging on the door right now, you know, or I'm losing a lot of points because my work is extremely stressful right now. But where can I get more points from? Because I know there's places to get points from. So yes, the biggest misconception is that however you're having sex now is going to be the way you have sex forever. It's kind of like if you did an exercise routine now, like when you were 18 and you were running every day and then your knees aren't so great, or 23, or you don't have the same amount of time that you had, or you just don't enjoy the gymnastics you were doing, or you don't live near a swimming pool, you just change things up. You don't assume that the way you exercised and moved when you were 18 is going to be the way you're doing it for your whole life. And that's true about sex.
Okay. Would you say there's like a right age, or like the best age that usually has the best sex, like people that you've spoken with, or is it?
That is such a great question. That is such a great question. No, I will say the best sex, or I wouldn't even say the best sex, I say the easiest sex, is usually early on in the relationship. One of two things happens early in, and that early in relationship could be when you're 15, when you're 23, or when you're 63, right? Like, when I see older women who are in new relationships, they also are having amazing sex, right? Your hormones shift so much when you're in a new relationship, and your brain shifts so much. So it's easiest to have sex in those relationships. I am very invested in people having long-term monogamous relationships. I'm not anti. If I have patients who come in who are in polyamorous relationships or in open relationships, that's fine. But I feel like there's a unique challenge for those of us who want to be in long-term monogamous relationships and maintain really good sex. And I think it's totally doable. It's just a little harder than people who start new relationships every 2 years. So I think that that's true. So I will say that there is a unique struggle sometimes with young women with pain. Mm-hmm. And that really can set the stage, all kinds of pain, vaginismus in particular, and that can set the stage for your sex life for a long time. So if you're having pain and you're listening to this podcast, don't let it go one more day. Like, fix it now, because the secondary problems are made worse than fixing the pain, which can be fixed.
Is vaginismus something you would say comes up more often with religious Jewish women, or?
That is a great question, Abby, also. So vaginismus, there is no data. I can only tell you, having talked to a number of therapists.
Explain what it is for a second, because maybe.
Yes. Vaginismus is a condition where you either can't get a penis into the vagina or anything into your vagina, or you can, but it's extraordinarily painful. And generally, it's a combination of tight muscles clamping down and fear of some sort. So some women have a lot of fear, but not such tight muscles. And some women have really tight muscles and not so much fear. And we at Maze are like vaginismus central. We have women flying in from all over the world to treat the vaginismus. And it's so, so treatable. And it's so, so prevalent. And it's like 10% of women. The stats are 10% of women. So you think about your, that means one out of every one of your 10 friends has it. And I promise you, they feel like they're the only ones in the whole world. And they're the worst case I've ever seen. And there's no way we're ever going to fix them. This is like so classic of vaginismus patients. And I sit there with these women and I say to them, you're not so special. I mean, you personally are super special and we love you, but your condition isn't so special. I promise you, you're not the worst. We can help you. It's totally fixable. What isn't fixable is the damage to their self-esteem that happens, or to their relationships, if they let years go by. I mean, we've had women come in after, we had one woman who was married 26 years. She had two kids from artificial insemination because she couldn't have penetration. And it was 12 weeks and she was all done and fine.
God.
I know, crazy, crazy story, right?
So it's tragic.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. So it's really common. I'm telling you, the best thing you can do for your friends and your groups and the people who listen to you is to let them know that vaginismus is really treatable. There's other pain conditions that are a little more complicated, but almost all pain conditions are totally treatable. But the damage, the secondary damage to somebody's sense of themselves as a human being and the black cloud they walk around with because of the fear of this, that is much harder to fix in the long run.
Can't imagine.
So for people that, at least, like, you know, we're a Jewish podcast for Jewish women. So for women that are struggling to talk about it and don't feel comfortable, like, you know, that, you know, grew up in more observant homes or just like homes general, how do you recommend talking about sex openly, how to destigmatize it in the Jewish community, even, you know, not just your clients, but, you know, amongst ourselves, with friends, with family?
So I love that question. So first of all, I do another podcast called The Joy of Text. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I do it with Rabbi Dov Linzer. We've been doing it for 5 years or 6 years at this point. And we cover everything, male masturbation. And it's with the intersection of Judaism and sexuality. So we talk a lot about Jewish law, but also about Jewish principles. We pull out Talmudic texts and, you know, biblical texts. We have a blast doing it. He's funny. I hope I'm funny. We have a great time. And honestly, I feel like it's such a great way for people to be able to have conversations about, to listen to a conversation about male masturbation, female masturbation, lesbianism, using the mikvah, the ritual bath, infertility, you know, lack of orgasm issues, you know, community responses to things. Like, every topic you could imagine, if you think of a topic we haven't touched on, pornography, fantasizing, if you think of a topic we haven't touched on, you should email me, because, you know, we just keep going and, you know, I'm always open to new topics. So I think listening to people talking in a healthy, sex positive way is unbelievably helpful. And I think starting to talk to your friends, to really sort of just tiptoe into it. Start talking to your friends about it. Say, like, nobody's talking about sex. We don't know. If you feel like the friend backs away and closes down, find another friend. Find people that you can talk to. Not to say get rid of the friends.
That are more open and willing.
Yes, because the more you surround yourself with people who are sex positive, who can talk about it, the better it will be for you in the long. I mean, I said to parents, you got to start talking about this. And I know you're uncomfortable. So you get in that shower and you say words like penis, vagina, vulva, you know, masturbate. You just say those words out loud. Say them to the mirror. Say them to your partner. Say them to your, you know, and then when you're talking to your kid, it doesn't feel stilted at all. Like, you can see, to me, talking about these things is kind of the same as talking about, you know, eating eggplant for dinner. It's so nice. And anybody can do that. Anybody, you know, people are always saying to me, Batsheva, how is it that people tell you all this stuff in this first meeting? And I'm like, because for me, it's so comfortable. And You can get there too. I'm telling you, Jory and Abby, you could totally get there. Like, you just got to start talking.
I recently have been more open, like with my friends, and just talking about it more and more and more. And like, now it's fine. But I remember, you know, in college and things like that, it'd be more quiet or kind of frowned upon, or just wasn't like, oh my gosh, she's doing that. She's a hoe. Or like, you know.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And the irony of that, of course, is that the Talmud has so many passages about sex, as does the Bible. Tanakh is just full of passages about sex. And they either skip them. Like, I always say to parents, that's a great way to start conversations with your kids. There's so many sources that talk about sex. And like, so the irony is that we grow up in these religious homes and nobody talks about it, even though the texts
are right there.
Yes. It's crazy, yeah. Right?
Wow. But mostly all of it happens though, like after marriage, right? Most of the stuff that's talking about.
Well, when you start looking at the Talmud, there's all these crazy stories about, there's stories about rape, there's stories about consent, there's stories about, like, you know, demons turning into women, people having sex with, I don't know, there's great stories in the Talmud. I'm telling you, listen to The Joy of Text.
Yes. Talk about demons turning into women. Yeah. Like a wild story. Love it. Have you seen Sex Ed on Netflix?
Of course I saw Sex Ed on Netflix. I loved it. I did have, the first year, I was a little irritated. My husband says he cannot go with me to any of these movies or watch shows because I'm like an umpire at a baseball game. Like, I'm screaming at the TV screen.
Like, but, it's wrong.
Exactly. So the way they portrayed vaginismus in that first season, where she takes the bicycle down the hill, she has to get past her fear. So she takes the bicycle down the hill. So that just irritated me. But then they backpedaled. Sorry about the pun. But they backpedaled, and they had her working with dilators the next year, and it was much, much better. No, I love Sex Education. I think they did a terrific job, really. Okay. They didn't call me for advice, but they still did a terrific job.
They shut up, right?
You should have played the mom who's a sex therapist.
I know.
You know,
next season. I'll play the grandmother.
next season. Amazing.
Well, is there anything else you want to add to our listeners that we didn't touch upon?
I think the only thing I'll leave you with is that you have to remember that, and it's best sex should just be fun. Like, try to make it not be fraught with too much meaning, too much right or wrong, too much like you said, she's a hoe. She's not. Like, sex should be something that is just life affirming, makes you feel great about yourself. Again, whether it's sex for one or sex with a partner. And we need that. We need, our sexual energy is such a critical part of us. And the more you can kind of embrace it and have fun with it and not be scared of it and know that it's totally there for you, you just have a little more information, the happier I think you'll be.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Take that with me.
Yeah, you're such an inspiration, for real. I'm sure you're not the first time you're hearing this. I'm sure you hear it from your patients and everything.
Thank you.
Where can we find you on social media? Where can everyone else find you for more daily inspirational posts and everything?
So I'm constantly on Instagram, constantly at Dr. Batsheva, DrBatsheva on Instagram, on Facebook, a little bit on Twitter on thing. My little Instagram elf, who you know from Israel, puts me on TikTok quite a bit. I find that very amusing. I was tossed off TikTok already once. I can't quite figure that out, but then I got back on again under a different handle, but it's still Dr. Batsheva, I think. And Maize Women's Health, you can, you know, if you want more information about all of the things I talked about, you can go either Maize Women's Health, or, you know, that's a good place to start, or get my book.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Ugh, learned it so much. Thanks, guys, for listening. And
connect with Dr. Batsheva online or get her book. And
amazing.
Thanks for listening.
Woo.